If we catch a criminal, when we catch a criminal, there's nothing we can do but play cops and robbers, cops and robbers.
Chapter 2. Through a glass, darkly.
Your revolution, now you're waging war again. Marching on the spot when you should have made amends. You say you fight for us, cross your heart and hope to die. You're a bully in the playground, I will hang you out to dry. Blame Simon, cause he said you got two lives down and one life left. Blame Simon, he said you can think better with a hole in your head. Oh, you can think better with a hole in your head. If we catch a criminal, when we catch a criminal, oh, there's nothing we can.
Coruscant, 13 years after the occupation of Naboo. Newt Gunray, the Viceroy of the Trade Federation, was so angry that he was practically spitting in outrage. I want them dead, that witch Amidala and her pet Jedi!
Obi-Wan Kenobi has made it abundantly clear that he no longer considers himself a Jedi,
Mace Windu pointed out, his voice chilly. Gunray carried on as if he hadn't heard the Jedi Master. I was promised that they would be dead by morning. You Jedi swore to me that they would be illuminated, and now this? He pointed one quivering gray-green finger at the hologram that was playing on a loop from the big holoprojector in front of the Supreme Chancellor's desk. Neither Windu nor Yoda glanced at it. They had already viewed it over a dozen times before the first summons from the Senate building had arrived. It was probably still being analyzed, even now, by other members of the Jedi Council. Assassins the Jedi are not, Yoda said sharply, tapping his gimmer stick on the floor for emphasis. Promises there were only in your own mind, Viceroy. I was made assurances, not by us. Windu informed him. It is not the way of the Jedi to countenance murder, even for individuals so obviously misguided as Obi-Wan Kenobi and Queen Amidala. He eyed Gunray with distaste. I would be interested to hear from whom you received these promises, Viceroy. As would I. The big double doors to the executive office slid silently open, as the Supreme Chancellor entered.
I know that I made no such promises, Viceroy Gunray. Dooku was a tall human male, gone a little fleshy with age, but still with a face like a sword blade behind his white beard. Unlike the two Supreme Chancellors that had preceded him, Finis Valorum and Palpatine of Naboo, he shirked the heavy velvet robes of office, and was instead rather plainly dressed in very dark red, his only adornments hints of silver at his collar and cuffs. Ignoring the polite bows of the two Jedi Masters, he strode past them and seated himself behind his desk. He paused the holoprojector with a gesture, freezing the hologram on a still of Obi-Wan Kenobi, with his white lightsaber ignited, standing over the two captured Jedi. Queen Amidala was clearly visible behind him. The Jedi may shirk from assassinations, Master Yoda, but Master Onduli and Master Koth were clearly on Naboo for some reason. Whatever that was, the Naboo have interpreted it as a threat and reacted accordingly. Do you care to explain, or shall I be forced to draw my own conclusions?
Windu and Yoda exchanged a look.
Informed we were, Yoda said finally, at a lakeside villa were Kenobi and Amidala for a short time. Fewer guards there would be. Vulnerable to a precision strike they would be. Intended to be extracted and brought to Coruscant they were.
Presumably this endeavor did not go as planned, Dooku said dryly. It did not.
Windu slid a data chip into a second holoprojector, turning off the lights with a wave of his hand.
This is the last transmission we received from Master Koth's droid cam before the signal was lost. The hologram had a colorless quality that suggested it had been taken at night as it blossomed on the holoprojector, displaying a stone balcony over the lakeshore. Vines twisted up the columns supporting the roof, and flowers spilled over the balustrade. It would have seemed idyllic, if not for the two Jedi Masters swinging themselves over the balustrade. They landed soundlessly on the balcony, pacing forward on the gleaming marble floor. The doors to the master bedroom had been left open for the night, gauzy curtains fluttering in the breeze off the lake. Silently, the two Jedi stole through the open doors, the droid cam following them into the master bedroom. There were more curtains around the bed itself, gauzy and so thin that the two figures sleeping in it were clearly visible. Kenobi nearest the balcony, one hand hidden beneath his pillow, the other flung casually across his lover's waist. Amidala curled up beside him, facing the door, her long braid lying over her bare shoulder. At a nod from Eeth Koth, Luminata unduly started to move around to the opposite side of the bed, twitching the curtains back as she reached inside her cloak for something. Even Dooku flinched back with the sudden violence of what happened next. Kenobi's eyes snapped open. He caught the bed's headboard in both hands to brace himself as he slammed a kick into Eeth Koth's chest, sending the Zabrak stumbling backwards. Amidala slapped her closed fist against Unduli's wrist. The syringe she had been holding flew out of her hand and hit the nearest wall. She swung a foot up to kick Unduli in the jaw, but the Jedi swayed aside, grabbing Amidala by the base of her long braid as she slammed the Queen's head against the nightstand. Amidala rolled off the bed in a tangle of white sheets, briefly vanishing from the hollow image. Kenobi and Eeth Koth were fighting, fast and furious. Kenobi, on his feet now, his nose bloodied, caught the gauzy white bed curtains between his hands. He wrapped them around Koth's neck, drawing them tight as he and the Zabrak struggled. Koth slammed him back against the wall, a delicate glass vase shattering as they rammed into the nightstand. A lightsaber hilt rolled off to hit the floor. Unduli swept in. Kenobi turned sideways to block her blow, snapping a bare foot into her knee. Bone broke with a deafening crack, and Unduli collapsed, her face blanching in pain before a shot rang out. The Mirialan Jedi slumped backwards, trembling from the after effects of the stun blast. Eeth Koth, his fingers scrabbling at the curtains, went limp a few moments later. Kenobi released him, stepping back as his opponent fell forward against the floor. He held out one hand for his fallen lightsaber hilt as Amidala straightened up on the other side of the bed, holding a blaster in both hands. Blood ran down the side of her face from a gash on her forehead. In the distance, the sound of running footsteps could be heard.
Was that all of them?
Her voice was a little lighter than in her official speeches, tight with adrenaline and pain.
I can't sense anyone else.
Kenobi ignited his lightsaber with a blaze of white plasma, towing Eeth Koth over.
Jedi. That's why I didn't feel them coming. Jedi? Dooku wouldn't dare.
Amidala rose from her crouch, letting go of her blaster with one hand as she pulled the sheets up over her bare breasts. Kenobi turned back toward her, his face creasing in concern.
You're hurt.
His gaze caught on the hovering droid cam. He made a yanking gesture with his free hand. The droid cam suddenly pulled closer. The last thing its visual sensors registered before the picture dissolved into static was the blade of his lightsaber arcing toward it. Newt Gunray was barely able to contain himself before the lights came back on.
I told you that they were dangerous! They must be terminated immediately!
Control yourself, Viceroy, Dooku said coldly.
Well, I can certainly see how Queen Amidala came to the conclusion that the Jedi were attempting to murder her. Do you have an explanation for your actions? I distinctly remember ordering that no moves were to be made on either Kenobi or Amidala without my express command.
Came to us, word did, through a trusted agent, Yoda said. For a short time only would they be vulnerable. Act immediately we had to, or lost the chance would be.
And instead, you lost two Jedi Knights, one of whom was a member of the Council, and convinced Amidala and her lover that the Jedi are personally opposed to them. A fact that she has now adequately conveyed to every being in the known galaxy with a holonet connection. Well done, Master Jedi. He paused significantly. Over a dozen planets that were wavering have already gone over to the Confederacy in the 2 hours since this was transmitted. I expect 100 more to follow them by the time the sun sets on Coruscant.
Our intention this was not, Yoda pointed out.
Well, I sincerely hope not.
Dooku tapped one finger against the table.
Especially given that by attacking Queen Amidala on her homeworld, you fired the opening salvos that will bring this war out of the deep space regions and colony worlds of the Outer Rim and into the Mid-Rim and the Expansion Region, possibly even into the Core Worlds. And the galaxy will see it as my doing, thanks to the Queen. You do realize that we shall be forced to retaliate.
Yes, said Gunray. You must attack that witch in her own home. The Trade Federation's armies will lay Naboo to waste.
Shut up, you fool, Dooku snapped. Your army on Naboo 13 years ago was what began this whole affair in the first place. Were it not for the rash actions of the Trade Federation, Naboo and its constituents would still be loyal to the Republic. The Jedi Order would not have lost the most promising young knight in a century, and Qui-Gon Jinn would still be alive, so if I were you, Viceroy, I would hold my tongue unless asked to speak.
Scowling, Gunray subsided.
He muttered, "It was you who summoned me here, Chancellor Dooku."
Because past experience has proven that almost any attempt on Queen Amidala's life will have the Trade Federation's slimy fingerprints all over it, said Dooku. You claim that you were made promises regarding the lives of Queen Amidala and Obi-Wan Kenobi. We have established that neither I nor the Jedi made those promises.
Who did?
Gunray looked shifty. Though, since that was his default expression, it made little difference.
It was a Jedi, he said at last.
Who?
Windu demanded. The Nemoidian glanced around the room, flinching a little under the implacable stares of two Jedi Masters and the Supreme Chancellor of the Republic, who, before his resignation from the Order, had himself been a Jedi for almost 60 years. Reluctantly, Gunray said,
"A human female. She did not identify herself to me. She swore to me that the Jedi would see Amidala and Kenobi disposed of once and for all."
"No Jedi would make that promise,"
Windu said flatly.
"You were deceived, Viceroy."
"As were you, it seems," Dooku observed.
"Leave us, Viceroy."
Gunray opened his mouth to protest, caught the Supreme Chancellor's glare, and bowed stiffly before departing. Dooku did not speak again until the doors had shut behind him.
"Does this agent of yours have a name?"
Yoda and Windu glanced at each other, Windu stapling his hands.
"A code name.
He's been reticent about his true identity.
We call him Agent Phantom."
"And this Agent Phantom of yours is trustworthy enough for you to risk the lives of two Jedi Masters merely on his word?"
"Phantom's information was good," Windu said. "Kenobi and Amidala were there, and relatively unguarded.
Masters Koth and Unduli dispatched several guards before entering the villa itself.
We underestimated Obi-Wan. Apparently a recurring theme, Dooku said dryly. The man has spent the past 13 years protecting Amidala from assassins, hired muscle bounty hunters, battle droids, and every other breed of scum and villainy in the galaxy. I would not be surprised to find that he has more combat experience than any 10 Jedi his age. He would not find 2 knights, even 2 of Master Koth's and Master Unduli's quality, much of a fight. Especially when he thought that his lover's life was at risk. Was it, by the way? Neither Queen Amidala nor Captain Kenobi were to be harmed, Windu said. Amidala dead would lead to chaos in the Outer Rim and the Mid Rim. Without Kenobi, Amidala would be dead within a week, a month at most. And we do not kill our own. His mouth tightened. A maxim that Obi-Wan apparently forgot. Left the Jedi, Obi-Wan did, Yoda reminded him. I am aware. Windu made a sharp, meaningless gesture, then reached out to pluck the data chip from the projector. Choosing that woman over the Order was one thing, but this time he has gone too far. The murder of 2 Jedi cannot be forgiven. Not the way of the Jedi vengeance is, Yoda said sharply. Thought Obi-Wan and Amidala did, that threatened their lives were. Understandable, then, their actions are. Vengeance may not be the way of the Jedi, but the Republic must retaliate, Dooku said. Queen Amidala has given me no choice. Neither I nor the Senate had anything to do with this, but there is no point in denying it now. I didn't even hear about it until I received the transmission along with half the galaxy. This time, the Jedi have gone too far. Thought we did that autonomous from the Senate the Jedi ought to be, you believed, Yoda said, his voice dry. On this count, left the Order you did. That was before you tried to kidnap the most dangerous woman in the galaxy and the man who left the Order for love or principle. It doesn't matter which anymore, Dooku snapped. It is a war you have begun, my old master, a war that will engulf the entirety of this galaxy. Before this, we might still have gotten out of it without too much bloodshed. It was merely a matter of bringing the Commerce Guilds to heel and placating Amidala and Kenobi. So simple it is not. Not anymore. There was a wealth of disdain in Dooku's voice. He leaned forward and touched a comlink control on his desk. Commander Bay, put a surveillance detail on Senators Bail Organa, Mon Mothma, Orn Frita, Dual Bronk, Tal Merrick, and Chi Ikwe Pepinoida.
At once, my lord.
Said the cool, collected voice of the commander of the Senate Guard.
Alderaan, Chandrila, Ryloth, Kidurza, Mandalore, and Runa, Windu said, matching the senators to the planets they represented.
Ryloth has always been loyal to the Republic, and Alderaan and Chandrila are core worlds.
And Bail Organa is one of the few senators that Queen Amidala truly trusts. We cannot lose the core worlds to the Confederacy, as well as the Outer Rim and the Mid Rim. The others are friends to Organa and Amidala. Ryloth and Kedorza have no love for the Commerce Guilds. If they leave, their colony worlds will follow. And Mandalore...
Kenobi has a history on Mandalore, Windu said. We know that the Duchess Satine Kryze has met with Amidala several times within the past 5 years.
Precisely.
For a moment, amusement touched the corners of Dooku's thick lips.
Qui-Gon told me once that his apprentice had a talent for catching the eye of beautiful young planetary rulers, but I doubt that he ever thought it would come to this.
None of us did, Windu said. If we had, events on Naboo might have gone very differently.
It's a pity Obi-Wan didn't take up with Duchess Satine instead of Queen Amidala, If he'd been a pacifist's peacekeeper rather than a warmonger's weapon, we wouldn't be in this position.
No good it does to dwell on might-have-beens, Yoda said dourly. Amidala's sword hand, Kenobi has become. A plan do you have, Chancellor?
His former apprentice nodded.
Send Jedi to Alderaan and Mandalore, under whatever guise you think best. Unfortunately, Bail Organa is the Senate liaison for the Special Operations Bureau. If I put a civilian agent on Alderaan, he'll find out about it.
It's done, Windu said. And the others?
If you can spare the knights, Dooku said. I fear that they will soon be needed elsewhere.
The Jedi are not soldiers. Once Jedi Knights served the Republic as generals in the wars against the Sith and the Mandalorians, Dooku said. I fear that time has come again. Master Yoda, I would like you personally to go to the planet Kamino. According to our agents in the Confederacy, the next batch of clone troopers will be ready within the next planetary rotation. You will offer the Kaminoans twice as much as the Confederacy for them.
Clone troopers? Windu repeated, his mouth catching in a frown. There has not been an army of the Republic for a millennium.
This Republic will not stand or fall based purely on the Trade Federation's droid armies, Dooku said. I will not allow this Republic to be held hostage to the Commerce Guilds. We must have our own army. Currently, the Kaminoans have the only one for sale.
Approve of this, I do not, Yoda said. Agree with you, however, I do.
He frowned, his wrinkled face narrowing in disapproval.
Cost us much, Obi-Wan and Amidala have. What of them? If Queen Amidala wants a war, I shall give her one, Dooku said.
The Senate meets in a few hours. We will decide then whether or not to give this affair the dignity of the name. Which is what she wants, of course. A body cannot fight a war against itself. If the Senate votes for a war, then her Confederacy will be acknowledged as a sovereign body independent of the Republic.
Windu's eyebrows went up.
Clever.
Unlike the Jedi, Dooku said scathingly. I have never underestimated Amidala and Kenobi. I've no doubt that this is what they intended when they made that transmission. And speaking of that transmission, Masters, the Jedi are not to act against the Naboo again without my express order. Is that clear?
The two Jedi Masters glanced at each other.
Agree, we do not, Yoda said. But obey we must.
See that you do, my old friend.
As the Jedi made to go, Dooku added,
Stay a moment, Master Yoda.
Windu bowed respectfully before departing, leaving Yoda behind with Dooku. With a flick of his fingers, the Supreme Chancellor turned off the holoprojector that had remained frozen on the image of Kenobi, Amidala, and the two Jedi throughout the conversation.
Troubled you are, Yoda observed,
folding his hands on top of his gimmer stick.
Though not only by the actions of Queen Amidala and Obi-Wan Kenobi, I think.
I've long expected Amidala to do something like this, though I never thought it would be the Jedi that pushed her into it, Dooku said.
He rose, turning to stare out at the cityscape beyond the window.
I sensed something while I was meditating last night, before the transmission was made. A great disturbance in the Force.
Sensed it also I did. So did many in the Order.
Dooku turned back towards him.
I have never felt anything like it before. It was as though a door had been opened between this world and another, letting something
someone through before it slammed shut. And now there is something in the Force that was not there before, both familiar and unfamiliar. Yoda nodded.
Jedi, he said. Certain of it I am. But not one of ours. Someone new.
Someone new, Dooku agreed. But who? And why?
And, Yoda added grimly,
how?
Alderaanian humanitarian aid ship, Queen Brea, somewhere in the mid-rim. According to the makeshift cantina's barman, well, Barbothan, the liquor had been brewed in a bathtub down on 6th-level port. From the taste, Padme Amidala believed it. She took one sip and set the tiny shot glass aside, wincing and coughing.
I warned you,
said the Bothan, with faint sympathy.
Here.
He topped off the glass with some kind of tisane that steamed and smelled faintly floral, but which cut the acidic smell of the liquor.
Thank you, Padme said.
She tried the drink again. It still stung the back of her throat and made her eyes water, but she was no longer quite so certain that the only thing it was good for was cleaning out starfighter engines. The Bothan waggled his ears at her, the equivalent of a human nod, and wandered off down the bar at a hail from some other patron. Padme took another tiny sip of the liquor and turned her attention back to her datapad, which, to her relief, had connected automatically to the holonet when she had turned it on. She had worried that it wouldn't. It was from another universe, after all, just like her.
And I would like to go back there as soon as possible.
Even if it lay in ruins.
Even if the flames had consumed everything that she had spent her whole life working to build.
If I cannot have empire, I will have chaos. And we will burn together.
Her fingers stilled on the datapad screen at the memory of Palpatine's chilly voice, gasping out his last words after Anakin had put his lightsaber through the Supreme Chancellor's chest. He had laughed while the Republic burned, while the Senate building came crashing down around him and clones had slaughtered Jedi and senators and stars only knew what else as a result of his dying order.
Retribution, he'd called it.
A Sith Lord in the Senate, at the head of the Republic. And Padme had trusted him with her life, with the lives of her people and her family. Even the Jedi had trusted him. For a moment, she was so angry that her vision actually went white. She sat stiffly in her seat, her hands clenched so tightly on the datapad that she ought to have worried about breaking it. If Anakin hadn't done it, she would have been happy to kill him herself. Of course, if Anakin hadn't done it, Palpatine would never have tripped the dead man's switch that spilled fire and blood and chaos across the galaxy. How could he?
Easy. He hadn't known. He had seen the future that Palpatine had planned for the Republic and acted to prevent it, and in doing so, brought on something so much worse that none of them had even considered. If Padme had been in his shoes, she would have done the same. But she hadn't been. And it had been Anakin's hand on the blade, and now she didn't know if she would ever be able to forgive him.
There was a light touch on her shoulder. Padme blinked, the white-out rage clearing from the edges of her vision, and turned to see Obi-Wan Kenobi standing behind her.
"Turn to drink already," he said, smiling a little to take the sting out.
Padme patted the empty bar stool beside her. I just couldn't be in that hold any longer. I wanted to think. Obi-Wan took the proffered seat, raising a hand to get the bartender's attention. The Bothan poured him a glass of the same brain-melting liquor he'd served Padme. Obi-Wan took one sip, blinked, then drained the rest of the shot glass in one go. The Bothan looked like he couldn't decide whether to be impressed or alarmed. Thank you, Obi-Wan said, his voice a little raw, and pushed a credit chip across the counter at him. Next one's on the house, said the Bothan, pouring it out for him, and retreated back down the bar at a faint gesture from Obi-Wan. Are you all right? Obi-Wan asked once he had gone. He leaned an elbow on the counter and frowned at her, his expression concerned. Did Anakin send you? Padme countered, instead of answering. Anakin is asleep, Obi-Wan said dryly. Using the Ouroboros took a lot out of him. He's not used to expending, or controlling, that much force energy at a time. Oh. She touched a finger to the rim of her shot glass. I'm sorry. It's all right. I just thought that none of us should be wandering around on our own until we know more about the situation. Padme sighed. He was right, of course, but I wasn't wandering around. I've just been sitting here. And yes, of course I'm all right. Why wouldn't I be? It isn't as though my husband just returned from the dead to murder the Supreme Chancellor and accidentally bring down the Republic, then send us to another universe where I'm apparently running the Confederacy and you're murdering Jedi, after all. Obi-Wan, because he was too good of a person to actually seem real outside of a holodrama, just made a sympathetic sound and took a sip of his liquor. Padme sighed. I'm sorry. That wasn't fair. No, it was the truth, Obi-Wan said. You don't have anything to apologize for. He paused. I'm not exactly pleased with him either at the moment. Good. It was petty and selfish, and Padme hated herself a little for saying as much, but as glad as she was that Anakin wasn't dead, she couldn't help thinking, if only he hadn't come back. She swallowed, drank half her glass, blinking back tears at the sting, and said, I've been going through the Holonet records on her. Obi-Wan's gaze sharpened. Have you found anything? We're in Republic space, so a lot of what there is has been interdicted, Padme said. I think I could get past it with a Senate code, but the system isn't accepting my code. I guess it wouldn't accept your Jedi code either. Probably not, Obi-Wan agreed. I'll try, though, if you like. I know Anakin's code and Qui-Gon's. I'll try Bail's later, Padme said. She had no idea if Bail Organa was a senator in this universe, or even alive, but it was worth a try. I did find this, though. It's a Holonews report from about 12 years ago. She tapped her datapad to bring up the report, then turned the volume to low so that it wouldn't be overheard by anyone other than two of them. Obi-Wan leaned close to see the picture, his brow creasing in concentration. On the flat panel of the datapad, the video had the faintly blurry quality of something originally filmed on a holocam, but the colors were brighter than they would have been otherwise, and the sound quality was good. Padme recognized one of the smaller receiving rooms in the palace at Theed immediately, though the decorations on the walls were slightly faded. She saw herself, a younger Queen Amidala, in royal face paint and a lavender-colored gown and matching headpiece that covered her hair, sitting on a throne at the back of the room, flanked by a handmaiden on either side, and accompanied by Captain Panaka from the guard. The room was filled with Holonet reporters, a handful of whom Padme recognized from the news crews that cover the Senate. The reporter, though she didn't appear on the screen, had a faint Ryloth accent.
I'm here at the Royal Palace of Naboo with Queen Amidala, waiting to hear her response to the Trade Federation's assertion that their one-year occupation of this once-peaceful Midrim planet was fully legal. Earlier this week, the Trade Federation finally ended its occupation, an event which culminated in a treaty signed by both Queen Amidala and the Viceroy of the Trade Federation, Newt Gunray, who has claimed that he was illegally held captive by the Naboo. Under this treaty, the occupation becomes an unlawful invasion of a sovereign system, an action that usually results in severe sanctions from the Galactic Senate. However, the Trade Federation is now claiming that the treaty, which is dated almost a year earlier, is invalid due to being signed under duress. This situation has been complicated by the involvement of the Jedi Order.
Obi-Wan's only sign of unease was to clench his right fist.
Two Jedi, Master Qui-Gon Jinn and Padawan Obi-Wan Kenobi, were dispatched over a year ago to mediate the Trade Federation's initial blockade of the planet. During the invasion, they were able to spirit the Queen out of the system into Coruscant, where she made a personal appeal to the Galactic Senate on behalf of the Naboo. They later returned to Naboo with the Queen, where Master Jinn was killed in the battle to retake the palace. Padawan Kenobi remained with the Naboo throughout the occupation, where he joined the self-proclaimed freedom fighters among the Naboo and the planet's native Gungan populations in a guerrilla war against the Trade Federation's troops. At this time, contact between Naboo and the rest of the galaxy was impossible, as the Trade Federation blocked all outgoing and incoming communications. Both the Senate and the Jedi Order claimed that they were unaware of the situation on Naboo, which resulted in over 100,000 civilian deaths. It was not until Representative Bail Organa of Alderaan arrived in the system with a humanitarian aid ship about 8 months into the occupation that the rest of the galaxy was made aware of the events unfolding here. This included the Jedi Order, which for the first time learned that one of their knights had been killed on planet. Following the end of the occupation, the Jedi High Council accompanied the new Supreme Chancellor, formerly the senator from Naboo, to the planet, arriving yesterday morning. Since then, they have been closeted with young Padawan Kenobi, who... Oh, my!
The camera swung around at the sound of a disturbance near the door. Padme drew in her breath at the sight of Obi-Wan, who had appeared as though summoned. He was standing in the doorway, his expression raw and a little desperate, as he looked around the room. He was dressed as a Jedi, his Padawan braid lying against his shoulder, but the robes were so clean and neat that they must have been new. Something about the way he wore them looked awkward on his compact frame, as though he had grown disused to the Jedi uniform. Amidala stood up immediately when she saw him, the reporters moving to the side to clear a path for her as she made her way to Obi-Wan. For a moment, they just looked at each other, the Queen and the Jedi. And then Obi-Wan said quietly,
"I love the Order."
There was a collective gasp of shock from the room, but Amidala's face only creased a little in concern. She reached up to pull Obi-Wan down into a hug, her small hands folding into fists against his back.
"You'll stay?" "I'll stay."
They were so young, Padme thought, embarrassed enough by the intensity of those few words that she had to glance aside. So young! And yet it hadn't been much longer than a decade ago. Were we really ever that young? Some brave reporter, not the one who had given the earlier report, called.
"Master Kenobi! Can you tell us why you've resigned from the Jedi?"
From the expression on Obi-Wan's face as he looked up, he had forgotten that anyone else was in the room with them. Amidala released him from the embrace, slipping her hand into his as they both turned toward the speaker. Obi-Wan's voice was still a little blank with shock, as though he still hadn't quite come to terms with his decision.
I disagreed with the Jedi Council on the Senate's intentions for Naboo.
Padme, watching, saw Amidala's hand tighten on his at the words. She turned quickly towards him, tilting her face up towards him, and he dropped his head to murmur something in her ear. Her voice came like a whiplash.
They wouldn't dare!
The vid cut out before Amidala or Obi-Wan could explain what exactly the Senate had decided to do about Naboo. Padme looked at Obi-Wan, wondering what his reaction would be. All he did was stroke a hand across his beard, his expression caught in a frown.
A year-long occupation, he said. I can imagine how the Senate today might deal with that.
So could Padme. She had seen it far too many times since the war began, though not in peacetime. The occupation she remembered hadn't lasted more than a few weeks, but even that had been long enough to rip wounds in Naboo that were still healing. They hadn't even been offered Senate aid. She turned her half-full shot glass in circles on the counter. What would the Jedi do to a Padawan who had been separated from his master for over a year? Obi-Wan glanced at her in surprise, his mouth tightening. Reluctantly, he said,
"His suitability for the Order would have to be reassessed. Situations like that happen. They're rare, but not unheard of."
"Attachment," Padme said quietly.
"Yes."
He looked down at his own glass.
"It's why Qui-Gon and I weren't sent on extended missions anymore, after what almost happened with Satine."
They were both talking around what they had seen. Padme had wondered, more than once, what it would take for Obi-Wan to shed his implacable Jedi reserve. Even in the midst of battle, filthy from fighting, she had never seen him look anything less than perfectly composed. Even now, he didn't look more than mildly concerned. She wondered how long the occupation had been going on before they had started sleeping together. Obi-Wan said quietly, "No Anakin." "What?" The non sequitur caught her by surprise. "Anakin wasn't there. He was the one who flew the starfighter that blew up the droid control ship during the battle. Without that, the Trade Federation would have been able to keep their invasion force on planet, as well as keeping the blockade in place. They must have been willing to keep blockading the planet, even with the Viceroy in custody." Padme clenched her fists. "Bastards," she said quietly. The old anger was still there, as fresh as if the invasion had happened yesterday. Never mind all the other sins that the Trade Federation had committed over the past decade. That was still their first and worst crime, as far as she was concerned. "I don't disagree." Obi-Wan tossed back the rest of his liquor. "Still, seceding from the Republic because of the Trade Federation seems like a leap even for you, Senator." "I know," Padme said. She rested her chin against her fist, staring at the empty glass bottles that lined the back of the bar. Obi-Wan. Patient, calm Obi-Wan, who fought like a demon on the battlefield and who had, without hesitation, put his own fragile human body between her and a barrage of blaster bolts. Just waited. "We have to go to Naboo," Padme said at last. "I have to talk to her. I have to find out why she did it." Obi-Wan nodded without surprise. "I'll tell Anakin and Rex," he said. "We'll need to find a ship."
There was no hurry, since they were still deep in hyperspace and would be for several more days. After some judicious and careful questioning, Padme had been able to determine that the refugee ship they were on, one of Alderaan's large fleet of humanitarian aid ships, was most likely on its way to one of the Alderaanian colony worlds in the mid-rim. Padme was familiar with the way Bail Organa's people usually dealt with refugees. She was fairly certain that she and the others would be able to slip away once they were on planet, especially with two Jedi to ease their passage if needed. She and Obi-Wan lingered at the bar, though by this point they had traded their empty glasses of liquor for a shared kettle of smoked Tatooine tea, black as pitch, and only made potable by the addition of so much cane sugar that it crunched between Padme's back teeth after every sip. She was a little worried about the possibility that they would be recognized, but Obi-Wan's beard did a great deal to conceal his features, and Padme knew from bitter, painful experience that no one ever really recognized the Queen of Naboo without her face paint. Besides, after the broadcast, it wasn't as though anyone expected to see Queen Amidala and her rogue Jedi Knight sitting together in the cramped confines of an Alderaanian refugee ship. "It isn't that I'm not glad he's alive," Padme said, "or that he wasn't really Darth Vader." Obi-Wan made an uncomfortable gesture with one hand. "That's debatable," he allowed. Padme shifted in her seat. She had only caught one glimpse of Vader, monstrous in his black armor and helmet, before Obi-Wan had locked himself in that room on Mustafar to duel the Sith Lord to the death. The revelation that he was Anakin, well, an Anakin from the future of another timeline, because that wasn't confusing at all, didn't lessen any of the terror he inspired. Before they'd found that out, she had been half convinced that Vader was Anakin, her Anakin, their Anakin, taken prisoner in the battle they thought had killed him and corrupted by the Separatists. Quietly, Padme said, "If Palpatine was an enemy of the Republic, then Anakin as good as did his work for him." "I don't disagree," Obi-Wan allowed, his voice soft. "He didn't intend for any of it to happen." "Intent doesn't excuse what he did." Obi-Wan hesitated for a moment, then said, "No, it doesn't. I would have stopped him if I'd realized what he was going to do." He tapped his fingers on the counter. "Palpatine must have suspected that Anakin knew something, though. He called an emergency session of the Senate. The entire Senate there, in one place?" "And us," Padme reminded him. "Straight off the Resolute." She pursed her lips together. "Though I won't pretend to know what the Supreme Chancellor was planning." "Nothing good, I assume." He looked about to say something else. Then Padme's datapad beeped a warning, and someone else in the bar called, "Hey, Narsk, turn on the corpse. The Senate's meeting to discuss the Seps." Obediently, the Bothan bartender flicked on the vid screen above the bar, cycling through frequencies before settling on the Coruscant political sector. The corpse, for short. Padme tilted her head back to watch, automatically cataloging the senators and representatives she recognized as the numerous hovercams in the Senate convocation chamber zoomed around. The names and the planets they represented popped up on her datapad, already set to connect to the broadcast. "There's Bail Organa and Mon Mothma," Obi-Wan said, with a faint undercurrent of relief. They were his friends, too. "I don't see Rodia or Kamino." "The Commerce Guilds are all there," Padme said, scowling. "The Trade Federation, the Banking Clan, the Techno Unit, all the rest of Dooku's corporate lackeys. So is Geonosis." "Pantora isn't. Neither is Taurus. Curious,"
Padme had a list of separatist-aligned planets saved on her datapad, and she pulled it up to check off the ones that she recognized in this version of Republic Senate. She showed it to Obi-Wan, comparing it to the Holonet list of representatives present in the broadcast session. "Almost half of the separatist systems from our own timeline are still in the Republic here," he murmured. "And quite a few Republic systems aren't. Most of the neutral systems are..." Blast. Tal Merrick's still alive. He scowled. A few years ago, the former senator from Mandalore had betrayed the Republic and almost murdered the Duchess Satine in the process. "Dooku," Padme said suddenly. Obi-Wan straightened up, his gaze sharpening. They watched the Chancellor's podium ascend, Dooku standing at the center of it, flanked by the Vice Chair and the Chancellor's staff aide, neither of whom Padme recognized. "This is so strange," Padme said, propping her chin on her fist as Dooku brought the Senate into session.
"That's certainly one way to put it," Obi-Wan agreed.
Everyone else in the makeshift cantina had gone quiet, watching the vid screen as Dooku came quickly to the point.
"This emergency session is called in response to Queen Amidala's execution of two Jedi Knights on the planet of Naboo earlier this morning. On behalf of the so-called Confederacy of Independent Systems, under the claim that they were sent to assassinate her." "Were they?"
Someone, the screen noted him as Stonk, the senator from Ithor, shouted.
"Who cares?"
Tal Merrick yelled back.
"This is uncomfortably familiar," Padme sighed.
"Well, I see they aren't any more competent than our Senate," Obi-Wan said. "No offense meant."
"None taken. I don't disagree." Obi-Wan rolled his eyes.
"I told you that you were too good for the Galactic Senate when Queen Jamilia had appointed you."
"Not this again," Padme replied. But she smiled as she said it. It was an old and familiar argument. They watched as the Senate went through its usual opening bickering. Then Dooku brought them back to order far more quickly than Palpatine usually managed. The first repulsor pod to drift out onto the Senate floor, the open space in the center of the massive dome, was the one from Alderaan, Bail Organa standing in front.
"Honorable representatives of the Republic,"
he began,
"this is an unusually aggressive move on the part of the Confederacy of Independent Systems. Already the Confederacy has begun to move its forces to protect its interests, including landing troops on the systems that have already seen the execution of Master Eeth Koth and Master Luminara Unduli as a sign of the Republic's weakness and chosen to leave us. Too long have we settled for half measures in the defense of our great republic, and as a result we have suffered constant attacks not only by the separatists, but also by pirates, criminals, and sovereign systems who have seen our unwillingness to bring the Confederacy to heel as a reluctance to engage in conflict. Hostilities exist, my fellow senators. It is time to admit that. We cannot continue to be willfully blind of the danger that this republic faces. We must act to defend this republic lest it fall before our very eyes. We must face the truth. The Confederacy of Independent Systems proves a grave threat not only to the territory of the republic, but to its security, its people, and its very being. I ask, therefore, on behalf of all citizens of the Republic, that the Senate declare a state of war between the Galactic Republic and the Confederacy of Independent Systems."
Cheers and applause, along with various other signs of approval, rang out from the other repulsor pods as Bail gave a slight bow and returned his pod to its cradle. A hovercam rested briefly on Dooku's frown before another pod floated out into the floor.
"Lot Dodd of the Trade Federation," Obi-Wan murmured. "Someday I'm going to punch his slimy face in," Padme muttered. He's probably dead now.
Well, at least Palpatine was good for something.
The Trade Federation seconds this motion.
There were more shouts of agreement. Padme frowned, trying to ride the currents of Senate opinion the way she did in the Convocation Chamber itself. She wondered if anyone besides Dooku had realized what Bail Organa had really proposed.
From the Separatist broadcast, I assumed that they were already at war,
Obi-Wan said thoughtfully.
I see I was mistaken.
Padme turned away from the vidscreen.
We have to go to Naboo,
she said again. I just don't understand. I have to go to Naboo. Bail's too smart to do something like that by accident, and if he's with the Seps...
Obi-Wan raised his eyebrows. Are you suggesting that was staged?
If the Senate declares war, a real war, not just a peacekeeping mission or troops to put down rebellion, then they're acknowledging their enemy as an independent entity in its own right. They just acknowledge the Confederacy's sovereignty. We didn't do that until almost a year into the fighting. It doesn't matter practically, of course.
No, it most certainly did not, Obi-Wan said dryly.
But it's not as though Count Dooku actually cared about sovereignty, since he started the fighting in the first place.
Indeed.
He stroked a hand over his beard, glancing back at the vidscreen.
I don't hear anyone talking about emergency powers. Or who's going to be doing this fighting, for that matter.
Maybe they've already both been established, Padme said. But her instincts told her that neither was true. I don't believe this. Is Dooku, actually less corrupt than Palpatine?
Things are very different here,
Obi-Wan said, which might have been meant to be soothing, but was anything but. Padme wrapped one of her braids around her fist and tugged on it, frustrated. That's an understatement, Obi-Wan. I don't understand any of this. None of it makes any sense. Naboo would never leave the Republic, and you would never leave the Jedi. She looked at him for confirmation, but all he did was shrug.
Normally, I would agree with you, but under the circumstances, it would be unwise to jump to hasty conclusions. I sense that there's more going on here than we have seen so far.
Well, one thing's for sure, Padme said, pouring herself another cup of tea. We certainly can't go to the Jedi for answers.
Obi-Wan blanched.
On his face, for just an instant, was the terrible knowledge of what they had seen. His inability to comprehend how, even in another world, he had been able to swing his lightsaber and cold-bloodedly murder two Jedi on her command.
No, he said. No, I don't think that we can.
Eventually, they had to go back to the hold. The Senate was still debating on the corpse, but after Bail's initial speech, the conclusion was all but a given, and even the novelty of seeing the Trade Federation and the rest of Dooku's cronies in the Convocation Chamber had worn thin after a time. She and Obi-Wan finished their tea, then left the cantina to make their meandering way back to the empty hold that they had arrived in when Anakin had thrown them out of their own timeline. Like all of Alderaan's humanitarian aid ships, this one was well-stocked and run by experienced volunteers. Even though it had been in space for the better part of a week now, there were too many refugees on board for the volunteers to know each one individually. So, by dint of going around to the different stations and a few judicious mind tricks on Obi-Wan's part, though he was tired enough that Padme could see how much even that small use of the Force wore on him, they were able to gather civilian clothes, food, and the numerous other small amenities that made life bearable. Padme, especially, was relieved to get a hairbrush. Anakin was still asleep when they returned, flat on his back, with his cloak folded under his head for a pillow, and his hand on his lightsaber. Captain Rex was sitting where he could see the hatch, cleaning his blasters. He looked up as they came in. "Any news, General? Senator?" Obi-Wan hesitated for a moment, in the process of handing over a change of civilian clothes. Rex had lost his helmet in the chaos of the Senate building, but even if he hadn't, a clone in armor would have been noticeable. Though, to be fair, Padme supposed, they didn't even know if there was a clone army in this universe. It was still better not to take risks. "Just the usual," Obi-Wan said after a moment. "Civil war." Rex took the pile of fabric.
Same old, then." "Essentially."
He knelt down next to Anakin after a quick look at Padme. Deliberately, she sat down on Rex's other side and began to unbraid her hair. She was in no mood to speak to her husband if she could avoid it. Obi-Wan woke Anakin with a light touch. Padme, watching, saw Anakin smile in the moment before he woke up properly, reaching up with his free hand to circle Obi-Wan's wrist. Then he blinked and sat up, dropping his lightsaber to run a hand over his face.
"Anything?"
"We saw the Senate broadcast," Obi-Wan said, handing him a meal pack.
"Bail Organa has asked the Senate to declare a state of war between the Republic and the Confederacy." "One doesn't exist already," Anakin said, letting go of Obi-Wan to rip the package open.
"Wait, Bail Organa? Seriously?"
"It struck us as odd, too. Padme believes that Senator Organa may be working with the Separatists, forcing the Senate to acknowledge the Confederacy as a sovereign state."
Anakin's gaze flicked to Padme over Obi-Wan's shoulder. She glanced down, setting aside the clasps that held her hair in place.
"But Organa hates the Confederacy. He's always supported the Republic."
Obi-Wan must have done something that Padme couldn't see, because Anakin just flapped a hand and said,
"Okay, this is even weirder than the other timeline. That at least made sense in a sick, twisted kind of way. So what's the plan?"
Obi-Wan hesitated.
"The Ouroboros?"
Anakin held up his left wrist, where the ancient Sith relic that had let him cross between universes glinted dully in the room's artificial lighting.
"Right now, it's just a really ugly piece of jewelry. Even if it wasn't, the inside of my head feels like I poured starfighter fuel in and then lit it on fire. Actually, that would probably hurt less."
Obi-Wan reached out to press his fingers lightly to Anakin's forehead. Anakin sat quietly, waiting for him to finish whatever it was he was doing, and added after a moment,
"Even if it was fully charged, I don't think I can manage anything for a while. I'd probably just land us somewhere even worse."
Obi-Wan took his hand away.
"If it becomes necessary, I can attempt to use it. But I don't think I'll have much more success at the moment."
"That'll teach you to try and hold up a collapsing building and perform mental surgery an hour later,"
Anakin said.
"Yes. Next time I'll just let us be crushed to death and skip the next bit, shall I?"
Obi-Wan said lightly.
"Senator Amidala would like to go to Naboo."
Anakin shot Padme a startled look.
"Seriously? But isn't that Separatist?"
He stopped abruptly.
"All right. Do you have any better ideas?"
Obi-Wan inquired archly.
"Under the circumstances, I'd rather not go to the temple if we can avoid it."
Anakin shrugged, still looking at Padme rather than Obi-Wan.
"Sure, what's the worst that could happen?"
Rex groaned.
"You had to say it, General."